With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Flavor Living Radio. This is Bryant, your host. I hope you liked the song, the organic song. Were you guys like singing there? Well, I was. All right, I admit it. I was singing. I was like, let me stop. But welcome to our show. Here we are in the middle of September, and we're back with another show this week. Today, we have a special guest. Hopefully you guys are listening to our show. We went to the Midwest. We went to the southeastern region, and we are going to the west. We're going to do more about the western states and the foods in the west, but we want to welcome everybody to our show. But today we brought a guest on. He's a professor. He's a professor at the University of Pacific. His name is Professor Ken Abela, and he's talking about really two words, organic and natural. Both words you see in grocery stores, food markets, and he kind of tells us what's happening from the past to the present to the future about those words and more, Western trends. And we just want to kind of hover over the West Coast. We don't kind of go, but, you know, just kind of find out what's happening. Food related and trends, and we're going to have more shows about the West Coast too, because they're doing some really innovative things. I can't tell you right now, but our future shows coming up, hopefully we can get this interview, so it's going to be a good interview. But today we're going to the West. We're talking about the West. I thought the first place we should go would be Seattle. We're going to go to Seattle, take a trip to Seattle, and then go to California. You know, in Stockton, Oakton, California, and then come back to Virginia. Those in that are kind of like a carpet ride here. But sit back and listen, and let's first go. And later on, after we go to Seattle, I have two announcements I have to make. And they're important announcements, you know. They have to be important if they're on Flavor Living Radio, you know. But let's go to Seattle and see what's happening in Seattle.
Pike Place Market is Seattle's number one tourist attraction, where the sights, sounds, and smells envelop you. The market opened August 17, 1907. 10,000 eager buyers greeted 8 farmers. Today, the market has 200 businesses, 190 craftspeople, 120 farmers, and 240 street performers and musicians. Bob Klein, a vegetable vendor at the market, says his day starts before sunrise.
A lot of produce comes local, you know, like the lettuce, spinach. There's a lot of things that has to be done here to make it not only look good, but to make it look appetizing.
Klein says the market's energy is what makes it special.
All the strange people, you know, there's strange people here. There's millionaires, there's movie stars, all walking through the market. So everyone is about equal, you know, when they walk through the market. But most people come here to gather their food, their meals for the next week or so. So mostly a lot of people come through the market and then scatter out across the island. So it kind of pumps out the blood of the city, I guess.
Carrie here works at Don Cusaro's meat stand. For Cusaro, the market is more than just a place of business.
Back in 1969, when I was just a teenager in high school, my dad and uncle bought the business, and I started working here, and it turns out there was this cute girl right across from me that was working for her dad that was in high school, so we said hi, and one thing led to another over a few years, and we ended up getting married. You never know where you're going to find love, you know.
Pike Place Market is always packed with local shoppers and curious visitors. Karen Anderson says there is nothing like it on Earth.
It's one of my favorite experiences of the world. And I've been to a lot of places in the world. But the market, I think, is just the exuberance of the people and the colors and the abundance of the fruits and the vegetables. It just makes you want to go home and cook like a crazy person.
Sally Amang has been selling fish at the market for more than half a century.
They say that I'm the longest in the market right now. It's very nice. It's very nice, and I do the best I can. Every day is different. Something different every day. It's never the same. It makes it, it's very interesting. If you want to see the real Seattle, come down the market.
For producer Wang Yiru, Elaine Liu.
What? Wait a minute. Is that somebody calling me? Let me go check my caller ID. I wonder who's calling me. It says Ting Wireless. Let me pick up the phone. Hold it for a second. Let me pick this up. Excuse me, y'all. I got to pick this up. One second, y'all. Hello? Yes, is this Ting Wireless? Yes, this is Brian from Flavor Living. How are you doing? Yes. You want me to tell him? Okay, I'll tell him. Yes. Okay. I saw on my phone there said Ting Wireless. I had to pick up the phone and make sure. But I'll tell him. I'm gonna tell him right now. Okay. All right. One second. That was from Ting Wireless, and Ting Wireless is a new company that's kind of, we are on the team as one of the partners for Ting Wireless. So what they just told me on the phone was that if you go, you don't have to type www. If you go to and just type on your search bar, just type in there flavorliving.ting.com, you will get 25% off credit if you sign up for Ting Wireless. Their phone, their mobile service. You get $25 credit on a new phone with service, or if you transfer your existing phone, you also get $25 from us, Flavor Living. Just sign up. It's called flavorliving.ting.com. $25 credit, Ting. So that's going to be our new, you know, they called me during the show, so I had to take the call. I mean, you guys are important, but they're very important too, and I had to take the call. So make sure you go to that site and get the $25 credit. Okay, all right. We'll be back. Well, you know, we have another announcement too. I wanted to say real quickly. This is going to be our first here in Hampton, Virginia. I'm in Hampton Roads, but in Hampton, Virginia, this weekend, the 18th, 19th, and 20th. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, they're having a expo, the Better Living Home and Garden Expo here in Hampton. It's on 1610 Coliseum Drive, and it's going to be the premier event for household items. I mean, you'll be able to see events like for remodeling bathrooms, for cabinets, kitchens, crafts, cookware, home improvements, grills, pool. We're going to be there all 3 days, believe it or not. Flavor Living is going to be there, our first remote show. So you're going to hear a lot of people in the background, and just we're going to be interviewing people on the floor. There's over 140 vendors, and we're going to do a live show from there on Saturday. Yes, on Saturday, but we'll be there all 3 days. So I had to tell you guys about it, and I think they gave me 200 tickets free for anyone who wants to go. If you're living in Hampton Roads, just email me, flavorliving@gmail.com. Tell them, Brian, we heard you on the radio. Tell me the name, and I'll put you on will call. I'll put you on a will call list, and you get to go to the Better Living Home and Garden Expo. It's no joke. 140 vendors, that's a lot of vendors. You know, that's really, you get to see the latest in pools, grills, and we're going to be interviewing Lifetime, a cookware company. They have been here around, and they know about cookware, about cooking. They're going to be doing some cooking demo, and wait till you hear the story and the history behind this cooking company. But we got to go back on our show here on Flavor Living and get back to our show. And listen, we'll be back right after this with our interview. Be right back. Okay.
Come on, everybody. Clap your hands. Ah, you're looking good. I'm going to sing my song. It won't take long. We're going to do the twist, and it goes like this. Come on, let's twist again. Like we did last summer. Yeah, let's twist again. Like we did last year. Do you remember when things were really humming? Yeah, let's twist again. Twist the time is here.
Round and round and round and round we go. Whoa, wait a minute. We got to get back to the show. So this is Flavor Living Radio. This is Brian. Let's go to our interview. Yes, talk to Professor Ken Albala. Here we go to the West Coast.
Professor Ken Albala. Is that pronounced right? Yes, I got it right. Yes. How are you doing today? How's the California? How's the West Coast?
Well, it's okay today. We have fires in the hills this past week, so everything is actually pretty overcast, and there's ashes everywhere, strangely enough, even though the fire is about 100 miles away.
Wow, I've noticed that here on the East Coast, and when I look at the news every so often, you'll see that on the news, you know, as far as the different... Wow.
We haven't had rain in a long time, so, yeah.
I got you. Yeah, but you're originally from... East Coast. You're from New York, right? You're from the East Coast.
Yeah, that's right. Grew up in New Jersey.
No way. So so is that real near New Brunswick, near New York, or how far is it?
Yeah, it was about, I don't know, half an hour from New Brunswick. I grew up in Monmouth County.
Oh, wow.
Not too far from the shore.
Okay. So how was your transition from the East Coast being there to the West?
Well, it's I still think of this as a different country. I feel like a foreigner here. It's just people do things differently, and it's a very different landscape. Everything is really flat here, very, very dry. So it's a different place, definitely.
Wow, so it took you a while to kind of adjust there, or you're still kind of adjusted?
Yeah, it's pretty lush. I mean, most of the vegetables that people eat in the U.S. are grown here, so it's we have really, really fertile soil. So this area is mostly wine, just north of where I live in Stockton.
Okay.
And to the immediate west in the delta is mostly asparagus, and to the north and south there's nuts like walnuts and almonds and fruits. So it's pretty lush place, you know, when most of the water that we don't have is going to agriculture.
Wow. Yeah, I know. I mean, I heard they do, as far as their farming, it's kind of like they kind of make their own type of water. And as far as their, it's different type of farming than the East Coast. I know that.
Definitely has to be irrigated.
That's the word I was looking for, irrigated.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wanted to talk because I was looking at something and I wanted to bring a listeners, because when I think of California, I think of natural foods, organic, and you know kind of like the history of this word natural, because you see it all there. When you go to the grocery store, you see everything natural, natural lettuce, natural yogurt, natural. So can you kind of tell us about the history about the word natural and how it kind of went into the word organic today?
That's right. Well, the word itself has been used for a long time, really even since the 18th century. If you think of Jean-Jacques Rousseau, in his book on education called Emile, he describes what he believed to have been a natural diet, which was bread and dairy products and simple vegetables and basically the peasant's cuisine of that day. And that sort of caught on as health food in the 19th century. So you see a various health food movements in the early 19th century. Sylvester Graham is actually the best example, after whom the Graham cracker is named. But basically, eat whole wheat and that sort of thing. So the word natural comes up in a lot of different periods in history. And at least when I was growing up, you know, in the 60s and 70s, you would find all natural on labels everywhere. And essentially, it was kind of co-opted by the food industry as and therefore became meaningless. I mean, you could call anything natural, and even though people's assumption was that it didn't have chemicals or the food was grown without pesticides or fertilizers and things, but there really never was a strict definition of natural in any sense. And even the word organic, although you know we have various laws about what can qualify as organic, it still might not exactly conjure the image we have of natural and happy bucolic farms, and certainly not small family farms, because most organic food is grown on an industrial scale. You know, it's not using genetically modified organisms, and it's not using irradiation, and not using conventional chemical-based fertilizers. But otherwise, it's really not that different from most produce.
Okay, guys, let's get into the office and have a meeting here, and we're gonna start. You know how somebody invented, like you said, the graham cracker? A group of people invented it. A group of people, or farmers, but this word comes from past the 1960s, right? Movement almost.
You mean the word organic? When that's been a really long sort of political process in getting it defined. There were each state used to do it on their own, and by about 1990 they started to frame federal guidelines. And actually, really interestingly, right when I got here to California, they were trying to include GMOs in the definition of organic, and there was a very large, obviously complaint of most people who said, well, there's no way we could avoid genetically modified organisms if we wanted to. So there's a petition went around, and that actually succeeded. It was actually pretty remarkable, but a really long, difficult battle to define what organic is. And
okay.
I think the difficulty has been that most producers, it's a long certification process. So if you're a small farmer, it's really hard to afford that. So a lot of people...
You mean, but you just can't come out and go, I have a farm and we sell organic lettuce. You can't do that.
Nope, not at all. Special certification. And if it, even if you decide to use organic methods, it takes several years until you can be certified, just because the chemicals are in the soil, basically.
Wow. So there's more to that word than meets the eye.
Yeah, there is. So it tends to be, strangely... very large producers, and even the, implied, and I think what the original people who framed it were thinking was that people would would grow food locally and sell it locally, and there'd be some connection to your farmer and that sort of thing. But most organic produce is actually really grown on a huge scale. It's shipped all the way around the country. So let's say something like Earthbound Farms lettuce, you know, which you buy in a bag, is grown in California, and it's shipped all the way across the country to New York, where you, you know, it's not a bad product, but it's not local or necessarily sustainable either. That's a different concept entirely.
Right. But I mean, I'm thinking to me the whole everything natural and organic. I know it started back in history. Historical times. It started way before times, right? Wasn't it before biblical times, right? Or Roman Caesar times when they had the different type of foods and everything then, and you know.
Yeah, I think they don't use the word natural in the sense that we do in modern times. But certainly an idea that what people are eating at court is really fancy, really expensive and exotic and difficult to find. And that people would be, there's a concept at least, that people would be eating better if they had very simple food that's not messed with a lot. I mean, there's a good example, you just mentioned Roman times, would be Juvenal, who was a satirist who got invited to this dinner and describes that the host eats really, really fabulous food and the guests at the back get garbage and bad wine and everything. And he just says, you know, he tells his friend, don't go to parties like this where you get insulted. Come with me to my farm, and we'll eat fresh eggs, and we'll slaughter a lamb that's, you know, fresh. And I think that's really appealed. I mean, the concept there is one that the food is going to be better because it's not, you know, it's fresh and local and not messed with and not, you know, extravagant just to show off class. It's actually tastes good.
Do you feel, I heard that you mentioned, is it a statement, you were talking about it's almost like a statement for certain types of people that have organic, they're sending a message out. Cause you were talking about it was almost like a rebellious against something.
Is. And I think you could also say it appeals to a certain class of people. You know, I mean, organic costs more. And I don't think it carries much clout among people who are just trying to put food on the table. So for people who, you know, it's kind of a statement of upper class, upper middle class morality, in a sense, of people who can afford to buy, you know, their organic kale and put it in a shake. It's a mark of distinction for them and definitely a, you know, a marker of status and distinction because, you know, they can look down their noses at people who eat Cheetos, basically.
Well, you know, being from New York, I mean, because I'm not sure. I mean, I've been in New York City and New York a couple of times. And going to California, you must really saw the whole really change of the health and just kale and big time kale there. You know, I hear kale, yeah. Kale, a lot of kale, you know. You know, going to different restaurants. Going to different restaurants there. Yeah, I mean, what did you see there as far as the different food habits? Of course, they're healthier, but did you kind of see, was it good? Was it, how did you view it, you know, being from the East Coast?
Well, I don't think in general the food here is that different from what you'd get in New York. I think, you know, we do have a certain amount of local produce in our farmer's market that's of quality much, much better than anywhere I've lived in the world. Really, but I think the best of our produce actually gets shipped abroad. I mean, it goes to, you know, it goes to Asia and it goes all over the world just because it's a higher price there. So I don't think people here really eat that differently from on the East Coast. I mean, certainly not the vast majority of mass-produced products that you'd find in a supermarket. They're exactly the same everywhere in the country now.
What? The Better Living Home, Kitchen, Bath, and Remodeling Expo is coming to the Hampton Roads Convention Center on September 18th through the 20th, offering you an amazing opportunity to see what's new in home, remodeling, home decor, and more. Meet with hundreds of experts and see thousands of products and services, starting Friday from 12 p.m. to 8 p.m., Saturday from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m., and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. That's the Better Living Home, Kitchen, Bath, and Remodeling Expo at the Hampton Roads Convention Center.
We're going back as we talk to the professor at the University of Pacific.
Now, you're a professor, a director of the department there for food studies, and that would be equivalent to your master's, right? Master's or?
Yeah, it's a master's degree.
Mm-hmm. A master's program. And can you tell us, you know, because I know there are people, you know, and myself and chefs, and there's so many different industries in the food industry, you know, that people don't know that they're aware of. It seems like the trend of the from now on, you know, from it started, you know, in the late 90s, but it's like food, television, competition, this, that, books. So you teach different classes about history, and can you tell us about the what you can do there at the school, and what's the trend as far as careers? You know,
well, the program is very interdisciplinary, so I just teach the intro to food studies class, and will eventually teach food history. There's also food politics course, a food and literature, a food there's a local food history course that we're offering in the spring. And eventually, there'll be the year after, there'll be anthropology of food, sociology, you know, a whole range of interdisciplinary courses. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that people will come out of the program with a whole set of skills to use on research, on understanding why people eat what they do, on historical trends in food, so that they will be marketable really to any kind of food-related industry. You know, a maker of Oreos, let's say, will want some insight into who buys it and why and what expression it has. You know, so I think that there will be.
I buy Oreos. I eat Oreos.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be people who want to go into that marketing and product development or research in, you know, basic R&D for food organizations. There will also be people who want to go into academia, just study it as a topic like I do, you know, and in food history. I think a lot of people will also go into food entrepreneurship, into small businesses, and I would say maybe a third of the class right now are people who already have careers in food, do something related, and just think, oh my God, here's this program, I need another degree, you know. So
well, I mean, because if you look at it, you started that way by going to different countries and going to different libraries and reading. So now you see a future generation. Because you must have been able to look into the future.
Well,
because at the time you must have been like the lone Jedi. I don't mean to say Jedi here, but I do. You must have been the lone food Jedi Knight there. You know, and
you know, it's funny you should say that, because the food studies is as an academic, you know, people studying food within various disciplines is about, I would say, 25 years old or so, and there were food studies programs like mine. NYU is the oldest, really, and that's about 20 years old. Boston University is about the same age. Issues, you know, more than just, you know, competition on TV and people flinging weird ingredients all over the place. It's really a matter of health and a matter of the environment and a matter of animal welfare and labor issues, who's getting paid and who isn't, you know, and a matter of there's so many issues tied up in this that it's almost surprising that we haven't been worrying about our food supply for longer. Or people have, but not from this multidisciplinary angle, really.
You, Professor Al, did a TED about why people need to be cooking or why we're not cooking more. Can you explain your TED that you did? Because I was talking to my girlfriend about that, and I was like, he's right. I mean, the TED was done in a couple of years back, but those principles apply to today, 2015. Why we're not cooking more, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Well, it's, you know, that's not really related to my history work per se. I like to think of it as activism. You know, I like to think of this as, you know, a side that's actually going to influence people and
yes.
make them change their ways.
Positive.
You know, in general, the TED Talk was about the fact that people rely more and more on convenience foods and pre-made food and takeout, and are losing basic cooking skills because they're not learning them directly from their parents, or for some reason the industry has convinced them that they don't have enough time to cook, so they don't think they know how, or they lose the confidence. And I think it may even be those, you know, cooking competitions on TV. People look and say, "Oh my gosh, look what this person is doing! I can't do that."
Yeah, so, like Iron Chef, you know, like, oh my god.
Yeah,
Right.
Yeah, and it's that, and it's also a lot of cookbooks really are not teaching basic skills anymore. They're showing people lifestyles, and you know, it's more like escapist literature than it is cooking instruction. So I think my call to arms there, in that, was that cooking for people is important socially. I think also politically, if people sit at a dinner table together and eat a meal that's made at home, it's mm-hmm. bound to be better, better tasting, probably better for you. I think it gives you at least I get a lot of satisfaction from cooking for people.
Yes.
And there's something lost when you just open a package and everyone eats whenever they want and, microwave something quickly. And that stuff tastes awful, I think. I don't think it's very good for you. And I think we're losing something very essential about what it means to be human, which is to eat with other people. And obviously, I don't think everyone needs to cook, but having someone in the family who does it regularly.
Yeah, I grew up on cooking, and that's how I learned from both my folks, my mother and my father. And I just watched and then got in there. They threw in the deep water and just went in there to cook. But, I mean, nowadays, like you said, I mean, if you go out the door, there's fast food, there's restaurants. There. Yep. And you said even the grocery store, the way they're set up,
Absolutely right. Yeah. And I think the only real reason the industry does this is that they can charge more for something that's pre-made. To buy a potato costs maybe 50 cents. To buy the same equivalent of tater tots costs $1.50. So clearly it's markup for them. They make more money. And I think they like the idea that you won't cook, because then, you're not buying raw ingredients, which are very pretty low price relatively.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's a pre-made meal, you're spending more. And I think people think, oh, this is more convenient, I'm saving time. But in fact, you have to work more to pay for that extra, food for them to do the preparation for you.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You become more dependent on them, and when you, really, when you're faced with an eggplant and don't know what to do with it, I think that's a kind of bad state of society. When someone...
I mean, I started giggling because I'm the same way. I've ate a lot of eggplant, but you're right. You're right on that. You're right. I wanted to ask, being there in California, what type of foods have you really started to dig out there?
Well,
you paused there.
Yeah, the thing that has appealed to me most about this place is probably going to be surprising. It's the ethnic markets. The city, the Stockton, is about a third Asian and about a third Hispanic.
Okay.
So we have some Asian markets that are just phenomenal. They're better than in New York City, believe it or not.
Whoa.
And
all right.
They are, if I can do historic recipes a lot easier because the Asian groceries carry a lot more ingredients. And so do the Hispanic ones, actually. These people don't throw food away. So if I go to a standard grocery, or even the very good Italian grocery where I normally shop, they're not going to mm-hmm. have organ meat. They're not going to have bones for making stock. They're not going to have, I'm writing a book right now on noodle soup. So
mm-hmm.
the ingredients, I can get pretty much anything from Asia or Italy in Stockton, whereas I don't think that's the case in New York. I'm thinking of New York City, and I know the food places in New York City really well. nothing like it.
Well, Professor, can you tell us where to if you, as far as your books, because you have 23 books and you've gotten awards, and how can, if they wanted to read some of your books, I know one of your books is the Three World Cuisines, Italian, Mexico, Chinese. How can they find you as far as the books and everything?
I think the easiest place to find them is on Amazon. Just Google my name. It's Ken Albala. And you'll find the books either from Amazon or from the buy directly from the publisher, although Amazon tends to be cheaper. So
yes. Thanks for being on our show on Flavor Living Radio.
Okay, thanks. A lot of fun. Great meeting you.
All right. You too. All right.
That's our show here on Flavor Living Radio. Thanks for tuning in and listening. And it's the Professor Ken Albala. And listen, we'll have more. Tune in next week for more, as we have more trends and more ideas that we want to bring out to you. Well, drive safe and eat well. And tune in more on The Flavor. Thank you.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.